Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. I'm doing something a little different in this episode. I'll be the one being interviewed. The amazing Kirsty Salisbury recently interviewed me about my new book for her podcast, Let's Talk Near Death. Kirsty is a fantastic interviewer, and I'm truly grateful to her for letting me feature this episode on my podcast. And yes, this is a bit of a shameless plug, but one I think you'll find worthwhile. My new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, has just been published, and it explores extraordinary NDEs backed by verifiable evidence. These are cases where people were clinically dead, yet returned with knowledge they couldn't have possibly known. Stories that challenge everything we think we understand about death, consciousness, and the afterlife. They got the train to London, and he was on the train with them in spirit form. So later on, he could say, you had this conversation here, you said that there, and they confirmed everything. And from 1911, the whole way he describes his near-death experience is exactly as we hear people who have them today.
Kia ora. Hello, hello. Welcome back. I'm excited to be here today. You have tuned in to the Let's Talk Near-Death podcast. I'm joined today by someone who's been on the show a couple of times now, one of my favourite guests, actually, which is Simon Bowne. He is incredible. We have spent a few conversations together. He's a past life hypnotherapist. He's a researcher of the paranormal, and he shares all these amazing insights on reincarnation, the afterlife, NDEs, the soul's journey, basically. And it's all explored through his own research, through his own podcast. So he has the Past Lives podcast. He has the Paranormal Afterlife podcast, and he's the Alien UFO podcast. And he's also just released his brand new book, which is so, so good and so exciting. And that's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife. So as you know, I'm going to be all over this topic. I absolutely love it. There's some amazing verified accounts of near-death experiences, and a lot of his research comes together in his new book. As I say, he's been on the show before, so if you enjoy today's conversation, maybe jump back, find some of the previous conversations. I've also had the chance to have a one-on-one past life regression with Simon. Again, another really interesting conversation. Highly recommend that. So if you want to know more about Simon, just click on one of the links that's down below in the show notes. And I know we're going to talk about some amazing things today. So Simon, welcome back. It's, I think, the third time back on the show, and I'm really excited for a new book. So welcome back to Let's Talk Near Death.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here. It's like friends having a chat.
Well, it is. And I know we've just chatted a whole lot before I clicked record and get started into the conversation because, yeah, it is like old friends. We've had quite a bit of contact over the years, bouncing ideas back and forth. And yeah, I really like it. I really like it. So congratulations on your book. We're probably going to jump straight towards that. So if you're listening, obviously there's a bit of history there. There's some amazing work that Simon's been doing. He's been interviewing all sorts of people around all sorts of our favourite topics for quite a few years now. Actually, Simon, how long have you been doing your podcasts?
I think it was 2018 I started, and I was putting a bio together for the book, and I didn't realise it, but I've done over 800 episodes now when you combine the podcasts.
So 800 episodes. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of work, dedication, a lot of passion. What drives you to do this? How did you start doing your conversations, your research?
Well, I don't know, really. I was listening to a lot of podcasts on my commute to work, and I had to drive an hour and 15 there, an hour and 15 back. So 2.5 hours a day. And so I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and having been a musician and having all the recording software and everything you need to make a podcast, I thought, I'm just going to give it a try myself and see if I can do it. And I was so lucky that I would email people and just say, will you be a guest on my podcast? And they'd say yes. And, you know, it might be episode three and no one's listening to it. But, you know, there's a lady in my book, Barbara Bartolome. She was episode three or four, and I'm still communicating with her. So it's also that thing of having such a fascination with the afterlife thing. And for me, it's about evidence of an afterlife, like the near-death experiences and children with past life memories and deathbed visions and all sorts of things that come together. And even after 800 episodes, and that includes a UFO podcast, I'm still interested, and I'm still, you know, when I've got a interview coming up, I still do loads of research to work out questions for that person and try and get in depth with them.
Oh, I love it. I think when it's a topic that you're genuinely curious about, that you just want to know so much more. Yeah, it really fuels us to keep going. I think it's so good. So another thing is, I love you talked about your near-death experience book, how it is verified experiences, how there's a lot of research, but you can actually prove a lot of the content that's in your book. And I think that's something that's so amazing, to have proof of an afterlife. Tell us a little bit more about your book. Are there any stories which jump out in particular? Are there any experiences or things that, I don't know, they really resonate with you, they stick with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say all of them, really. There's bits and pieces. And because there's actually a total of 30 near-death experiences, and they all have that kind of element where the person saw something during their near-death experience, and then later they talked to people who said, yes, that really happened. Basically, they kind of say, you couldn't have seen that because you were dead at the time. You were hooked up to this machine that showed your heart had stopped, your brain had flatlined. How on earth could you know this? Because you were dead. And that's the verification event. And so almost every chapter is a different near-death experience. And every single one of them, at the end of the chapter, I have a little section called verification events, and it goes over what is verified and how it's being verified. So that's why the title of the book is Verified Near-Death Experiences. And there's different types of verifications in each story, and each chapter is a different person. And so you hear the story of their whole near-death experience, the initial thing that caused them to be in that position where they would leave their body, whether it was an accident or a heart attack or something like that. And then I talk about the whole spiritual side of it and the experience they have with their afterlife, with their spirit guides, with their deceased loved ones, when they have a life review, and all these different things that happen, but also, you know, the verification events that they see. And it was just fantastic to write it, because most of the people in the book have been a guest on my podcast. So I got to talk to them about these things, these verification events. And then later on, I did a Zoom call with them all, and I said, can we go over this again? I want to get this exactly right. And then later I sent them the chapter after I'd finished it so they could check it for accuracy. And so they would send it back, and with maybe little corrections here and there. And some of them came back, they didn't want any corrections. So the near-death experiencer themselves has read the chapter and said, yes, that is correct. That's what happened. So I'm really glad that I've got that in the book. There's a few there that I couldn't talk to, like Pamela Reynolds. And there's a guy, Rudy, I can't remember his name, he's a cardiologist, and his patient died on the operating table. And they said, oh, that he's dead. The surgeons went off and got changed out of their scrubs and had their normal clothes on, and the nurses cleared up everything in the operating theatre. But they left one of the monitors on. I mean, the surgeons came back in the room, standing next to each other with their arms crossed. They're kind of like, well, what could have we done differently? How could we have saved this guy? And then suddenly it registers a heartbeat.
Wow.
And they're like, hang on a second. So, and they said that he was having a heart operation, and that they'd closed him up to prepare for an autopsy. So they don't do a full thing to close you up again. There's just a little bit. So that's one of the ones that I find fascinating. I couldn't talk to that near-death experiencer, couldn't find him, but that case was really researched by two guys, Titus Rivas and another guy, And also Dr. Bruce Grayson was involved with it, and Dr. Jan Holden. And they, you know, all work together. And I've got all the information, the people they interviewed, and they talked to the cardiologist, and they got all that confirmation and the verifications that happened there. So, and there's a one from 1911 of a young man that died in London. A wall collapsed and fell on him. And from 1911, the whole way he describes his near-death experience is exactly as we hear people who have them today. How he was out of his body and he watched things. But with that one, he worried about his mum, so he found himself back at his home, and his mum and dad are sitting there having a conversation, and she suddenly goes, "Something's happened to my boy. We've got to go to London." And the father's like, "Oh, don't be silly. It's a load of nonsense." But she said, "No, we'll get the train," and they got the train to London, and he was on the train with them in spirit form. So later on, he could say, "You had this conversation here, you said that there," and they confirmed everything that he described as actually happened. And there was a weird thing where he was kind of drawn to a house nearby his accident, and there was a woman there that had just given birth, and the doctor was in the room, and the mother and the child both died. And there was this little baby, and he was in the room, and he said he felt this powerful compulsion, this pull to the baby. And he felt that he could join with it, and his soul would enter that baby, and then he would live that life. And he said it was such a powerful feeling. And that's how he thought about entering his own body. When he got back to his own body, I'll try that thing that I felt with the baby. And it worked. And he, you know, he came back to life.
Yeah. That is, it's just fascinating. It's so, so interesting to me. Not the first time that I've heard people saying that they came across another, I'm just going to say the word body, for example, came across the choice of I could enter a completely different body and live out that life, or I could stay dead, or I could go back into my, quite often it was a broken body, you know, because for whatever reason it's had clinical death, it's either badly damaged or illness has taken it to a place where it would be a very difficult lifetime to go ahead. So not the first time I've heard that, but to have the verification behind it just makes so much difference because, as you know, Simon, 800 episodes, we hear a lot of incredible, incredible stories, a lot of incredible accounts, but to be actually be able to verify them, I think, is just what takes it to the next level. So interesting.
Yeah.
How do you think, because I love that you've spoken or your research has taken you down talking to cardiologists and people within the medical field and surgeons and, you know, some people that have experienced the near-death experience maybe from an outsider perspective, not having the experience themselves. How do you feel like over the years, how this topic has been, I guess, met? Do you think people are more open? Do you think there's more training around these types of experiences within medical situations?
I haven't come across that. I have asked that a few times. And I feel that there are doctors who are taking it more seriously. And we see research being done around the world. I mean, Dr. Bruce Grayson's been doing it for decades. And then Dr. Kenneth Ring and Dr. Peter Fenwick. And it's, you know, it's coming more to the fore, I think. And I wonder if it's something to do with the old guard are retiring and the younger doctors are coming through and they're more open-minded. I wonder if it's something like that.
Actually, that's a really interesting point.
I heard a phrase that said science progresses one funeral at a time. You know, you have to wait for the old guys to disappear so the young ones can really make their mark.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite true, actually. I think there's something in that. I haven't thought about that, but makes sense, especially now when we have so much technology, we are able to access this information. I'd love to see these topics being taught, yes, within med school, but also I'm thinking I'd love these topics to be taught within our school curriculum. You know, starting really young, that there is an awareness around death and dying is probably more my focus, but also the spiritual side of death and dying and the spiritual side of living. And just think it would be so good. But yeah, I wonder, it can't be too far away if it's not even there at the moment, having some paper within med school, medical training around these experiences, which would open it up and progress it. And I think I just get really excited wishing for this to be commonplace one day.
Because I do talk to some guests and they say that they're doing lectures at hospitals and people are coming to see what they've got to say. And a lot of nurses show up.
Exactly. And that's getting more and more common, which is really, really great. It really helps me. But I think having all these conversations out there, like your podcast and this podcast and, different conversations, are starting to raise the awareness on these topics. I'm blown away by the one from 1911. Just blows my mind. How did you get the information for that? Because I'm assuming they're no longer around. That was 100 plus years ago.
Yeah, there's a book that I came across in my research when I was trying to find these, and it's, I can't remember what it's called. It's something like The Art of Astral Projection, or The Phenomenon of Astral Projection, and it was published in 1951. And so it's that they've put all these things together, and I think there might be four little cases from that book in my book that I brought in. And so it said the 1911 one was in the London Evening Standard in 1925 when this man wrote in and told them his story. And so there's a chapter that's titled Early 20th Century NDEs, and there's five there. And there's a guy who was a British officer in the Victorian era, and he writes his memoirs. I think his name's Ogston, and he talks about how he was like injured on the battlefield, and he had this vision of being at home with his wife in England. And it was later he talked to her about it, and she was saying, "Yeah, that's correct. That's what I was doing. That's you saw what I was doing." Because he didn't really feel that it was something spiritual.
Can you remember the first time you came across a near-death experience account? Like, was that in a book or?
I read Raymond Moody's book, and I think that was in the 1980s, because his book, I think, was published in 1976. And I think I came across it in the 1980s. So that's when I would have really started to get interested in it. But I think it's there's so much research being done since then that there's so much more information out there, and this book of mine's, it's like I've read so many near-death experience books, and some of them touch on this verified thing that's called veridical, but there's only one other book that the focus is on these verified near-death experiences, and I think that was published in 2007. So I thought, this is what I'm really into. This is what my podcast is all about, this verification. So.
I think it's great because I'm wondering, so you talked about how there's 30 stories in your book, and out of all of the experiences you've researched, the people you've chatted with, was 30 quite hard to get the verification piece? Or is it more common than I think it is?
I think it's quite common. And when I've interviewed people about near-death experiences, we do a whole episode and we're talking about everything that happened. And then I'll say, was there any verified stuff? And they go, oh yeah, this happened, that happened. And it's like, that's the last thing that comes to mind for them of what they want to talk about with a near-death experience. Because I think there's a message there that they have this amazing spiritual experience where they learn that everything's all about love. And they have this life review where they learn so much about their behavior and how they've affected people. And they want to put that message across of how to behave and how to treat people and how to be more loving and accepting and non-judgmental. And there's this crazy English guy saying, no, forget that. What about verification?
I love it. Give me the details. It's true though, it's true. Some of the details, I think I'm possibly wrong in saying this, but I think medical records have come a long way as well. So I'm thinking for my own near-death experience, when I look back on my own medical records, it's all in there. It talks about being resuscitated, it talks about flatlining, things like that. But there's still a lot of information in there which maybe wasn't included. Possibly more around treatment, around aftercare, around after therapies, things like that. We didn't ask the same questions, years and years ago. So I think it's coming a long way, and I think it's becoming more important to have the verification in there. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I've got a
Yeah.
couple of cases in my book where the person, after they've just been resuscitated and they're able to talk, the doctor has come and sat next to them and said, "What happened during those 9 minutes? What happened to you?"
Yeah. See, I'd love that to be commonplace, to be almost like one of the boxes you have to check before the patient can be taken to the next level or discharged or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's one of my, I was going to say one of my patients, one of my chapters, and the woman has, Barbara Bartholomew, has been resuscitated, and it's like 10 or 20 minutes afterwards. And so she can, they're just allowing her to talk. And she starts saying, "I saw you do this and you did that and you made that phone call and these guys were doing the CPR," recounting everything that happened. And the a neurosurgeon was standing next to her, and she said he clenched his fists and his teeth, and he said, "I'm not going to stand here and listen to any more of this," and he stormed out the room. And
Oh
that's
no.
when the orthopedic surgeon sat next to her and said, "Well, what happened? Tell me again. Tell me everything."
Yeah, I can't help but question why would that be the response? I think I'm wired so differently that I'd want to know everything. Tell me exactly what happened. You know, what did you see? What did you hear? I'd want to know every little juicy detail. I'm quite a curious person. Oh, yeah, I wonder why that response was there. It must be something going on in their life, I suppose, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I've heard of something called ontological shock,
Oh, what's
where
that?
you have a certain worldview or a paradigm, and that's what your identity is based in. And for that guy, it might have been science and materialism and being absolutely sure there's nothing spiritual. We're just a biological bag of bones and organs, and when you die, you're dead. And to suggest that there's real evidence here that that might be wrong, it's like it's too much of a shock to the system. It's no, you can't mess with my paradigm. This is how I live, and it's just
Yeah.
too much.
Yeah, quite possibly. Very, very confronting, very challenging, especially if there hasn't been education around this, you know, in the earlier days. And I love how you talked about Raymond Moody's book being one of the first you read, which kind of set the scene for everything, because that's a very common story I hear, because Raymond Moody had such an impact in this field of research and understanding life after death and death itself and all of these topics. Back then, there possibly wasn't the same level of awareness of topics. There wasn't the research. So if it's foreign to you and you have, yeah, quite set beliefs, like you're saying, like I can imagine someone being complete atheist, which is totally fine, but being confronted by an experience where it conflicts with what you believe, regardless of what your beliefs are, yeah, it could be quite challenging, couldn't it? It really could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what made you go to your book talking about near-death experiences in particular? Because I know that you do a lot of different conversations within this huge topic that it is. You talk about paranormal experiences, you talk about afterlife experiences, UFO encounters, ETs, all of these beautiful topics. What made you want to do the book around near-death experiences?
I think because it's a very clear point of verification that they can have people who are on an operating table and there's all the medical records and they've got the readouts from all the machines and they can pinpoint the exact moment that the heart stopped and the brain flatlined. And they know for sure that that person's brain was flatlined when this thing happened. And I like that you can get that, really close in on the detail like that, that you can match those things up, and that there's no way that person could have known that thing. Because I had Dr. Eamon Alexander on my podcast, and you
Yeah.
know, he's the was it professor of neurosurgery at Harvard
Yeah.
Medical School. He said to me, "When your heart stops, your brain will flatline within 20 seconds or so, and it's impossible for your brain to make and retain complex memories because it's just not working." And yet that is what happens, and these memories are then verified. And in my book, there's lots of things that happen nowhere near the body, in the waiting room in another part of the hospital. I've got one with somebody who was in an apartment 7 kilometers from the hospital. And then there's a lady talking about how she found herself in a car with her sister who was driving to the hospital. And she saw her children at home packing a suitcase for her because she'd been rushed to hospital. And, you know, they could verify all of that stuff later, everything she said. And I think one of the criticisms that materialists have about these kind of verifications is they say, well, the person was in the operating theatre. They may have had some consciousness there. They may have heard things and then they kind of visualised what was happening. And so they weren't really floating at the ceiling watching it. It's just a hallucination. It's the drugs. But if they see something that's nowhere near where their body is, then that's a lot harder to discount.
Yeah, or if they can recount conversations or particular things. Gosh, so many accounts are coming to my mind that have been verified. Ones with they put the body part in the bag and it was the colour of the bag, because I think there was an amputation in that one. The one that really sticks out to me, and I... forgive me, Simon, you might remind me of her name. It's just totally gone from me right now, where there was the shoe on the roof of the hospital and in the OR and they're doing the surgery. She flatlines. She goes out of her body above the hospital. She looks down and she can see a shoe on the roof.
It's a nurse called Kimberly Clark.
That's who I'm thinking of, Kimberly Clark. I'm so sorry. It was right then. I'm like, I just couldn't quite remember her name because I had... someone else's name in my head. But yeah, so she's above the hospital, sees the shoe, wakes up after her near-death experience and says, hey, I had this experience. By the way, there's a shoe on the roof and nobody knew anything about the shoe. Turns out they went and got ladders or whatever they did. They found the shoe and they talked to people. Nobody knew that there was a shoe sitting on the roof. Like, how would you know that? And it wasn't visible from windows, or it was in an awkward place from what I understand, what I recall. For me, that's evidence right there. So people are seeing things within their surgery, within their experience. They're having conversations, like you say, even outside, possibly in the waiting room. I've heard of people having visitations. One was someone was asleep in their bed and it was the night time for them, different time zones, so they were quite far away from each other and they had what I would call a visitation from the person and then found out later that they had flatlined, were in the hospital, did come back, but they knew that that person was going through something very severe at the same time. So many interesting things. There's also one, you'll probably know the details way more than I do. I have an issue with my memory and a lot of these stories all blur. I'm like you, I'm hundreds of episodes and a lot of the details just kind of mix up and become this amazing, beautiful story. When people see each other within a near-death experience, so it's not a shared death experience, but the person has a near-death experience. The one I'm thinking of was there was someone in a hospital, had the experience. They saw the nurse that was looking after them in their experience. And then they woke up from their near-death experience. They came back to their body and they said, I saw the nurse in my experience. And everyone was thinking that they were just completely crazy. Turns out the nurse had died the night before, but nobody knew that yet. So when they found out that she died and this person had met their own nurse in the experience, blows my mind.
Yeah, and I think there was something about a car. I think the nurse, was it a red
was it
MGB?
A car crash? And, yes, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I say, some of the details get a bit murky. But yes, I was thinking, was it a car accident? There was something to, and yeah, it was a red MGB. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the nurse said to him, tell my dad I'm sorry that I wrecked the MGB.
Oh, yeah, she was worried about the car, wasn't she?
Yeah.
It's funny, you think through death and all of the things that we will put things into real perspective, and yet there she was worrying about crashing her father's car. It makes me kind of giggle. It's, I don't know. Yeah, the things we must think about. How do you feel about your own death in the future, Simon? Like, does this book, do these experiences or the interviews, did they make you feel a certain way about your own death, whenever that's going to be?
I suppose when I was younger, a lot younger, I would be quite scared of it and think that, I don't want to die. That's the end of me. But now, decades later, after doing so much research and talking to so many people and having little experiences of my own, that I really feel that when you die, it's like they say, it's like just taking off an old overcoat and you just move on. And actually, when you're in your soulful form or your spirit form, you think a lot faster, your eyesight's better, your hearing's better, and you can move much better. And it's that kind of thing that I suppose, when you know that, I feel like I'll die hopefully when I'm a lot older, because I want to spend more time with my family and what I'm doing. And but I don't feel afraid of it. And I actually wonder if I was in hospital or a hospice and the end of life care, I'd be sitting there quite happy and watching the telly and giggling and thinking, what's wrong with this guy? He's dying. He's going to be dead soon.
He's looking forward to
Yeah.
Yeah, do you feel an element of looking forward to it? I know that sounds so strange because, on one hand, you're not done, you're not ready, you want to spend time with your family. Is there any excitement about dying?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No. It's like there's no fear, and I'm not worried about what will happen. It's just you hope that your death won't be painful, and
Yeah.
you get reminded of little sayings like, I'm not afraid of dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Yeah.
Things like this. So yeah, no, I wouldn't say I'm excited, but I'm not fearful at all.
Yeah, I like that. I think for myself, I'm very curious. It's, yeah, excitement seems like not quite the right word, but there's a tiny little piece in me that is curious, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't fear it. I fear the process of dying because, like you say, you don't want it to be painful. I really hope my death isn't painful. I hope I have a really healthy, good life. But there's a part of me that goes, oh, I'm quite looking forward to knowing the ending. Quite looking forward to seeing what happens. I have a belief, bit of a personal belief. I feel like death might be a birth rather than a death. It's the start of something rather than the end of something. And I'm curious what that could be. So, yeah. I
Yeah,
don't know. I
because they
love to ask
say,
that question. Yeah.
in the spirit world, they kind of say that for them, having a life on Earth that lasts maybe 80 years, it seems like 10 minutes for them, and it's not such a big deal. And we're
Yeah.
really stuck in it in our bodies, and everything's so emotional and intense.
Yeah.
So I talked to a guy who said when he was in the pre-birth planning, and he was talking to the spirit guide about choosing his body. And they were saying, well, the body's going to have acne for about 2 years when you're a teenager, and it's going to be really bad. And he was like, oh yeah, no problem, I'll have that. That's because to him it seemed like, oh, that'll be gone in 5 minutes.
That's nothing. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. 5 minutes. Yeah. I think we possibly sign up for quite a lot more before we come here. Thinking, yeah, I think you're right. We're so involved in our body. And people talk about how this life isn't real, but actually it's quite real for us here right now. Long-term
Yeah.
perspective, maybe not so much. Oh, I don't know. I'm very curious. I find it so interesting. Now, you mentioned you just dropped in before about different experiences, and you said you'd had some experiences yourself which had led you to maybe not fear death so much or be concerned about it. Are you happy to share any of those experiences?
Yeah, there's lots of little things. It's like little baby steps on a spiritual path, and I could tell you all these different things, and it sounds like, oh, this happens all the time, but it's every 5 years or 7 years something will happen. And it's like I had this thing with feathers showing up, and I talked to somebody on the podcast about angels, and they say, there's an angel because the feather will be around. And next day I'm walking down the street, and this feather starts falling out of the sky right in front of me, And it just reminded me of what she said. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay. And I didn't really pay much attention. And then a month later, I'm talking to a medium and I mention that. And she's saying, oh, yeah, the feathers, if you see feathers. And I stopped that interview and we finished the call. And I went to my teenage daughter's bedroom, who she's very neat. There's no junk on the floor. And there was a feather right in the middle of her carpet. And I said to her, where did that feather come from? And she looked down from her laptop and was like, oh, I don't know. And then just went back to what she was doing. So I thought that was weird because it's the connection of talking about feathers showing up and then it shows up. And it's the third thing that happened. I was at a medium's house. I went to do a sitting and the medium was really good. And I was sitting in a chair opposite her. Completely clean carpet between us. She did the mediumship for an hour, and afterwards we were talking about things. And I mentioned this thing with feathers, and she says, look at the floor. And I look down, there's this feather in the floor, and it's in between us. And the whole hour of mediumship, it was not there. And neither of us got up and did anything. And when I start talking about feathers showing up in a strange way, a feather shows up in a strange way. In a really strange way, because it seems like it just appeared out of thin air, as they call it, an apport with physical mediumship. So that's a little thing, like it's like the spirit guides or angels are trying to move me on. They're trying to give me a hint, and it's like I didn't get it the first time. I didn't get it the second time, so they had to get more serious about it and, just teleport something into the room to get into my thick head. But then, I see a UFO really close up, and then I have some psychic vision of traveling somewhere, and then I have other little psychic things crop up, and then I see a UFO again, and it's all sort of here combined with all the stories I hear and the books I read. It kind of comes together.
What do you mean you see a UFO? How do you, where are you? What's going on? Are you're awake? You're not dreaming? Can you expand?
I did a gig in a town west of London called High Wycombe, and this was a Sunday night, and it was a blues gig, and we all packed up in our cars, and it was 1 a.m. I'm on the motorway heading back into London, and I knew this stretch of the motorway really well, and so it's 1 a.m. on a Monday morning, and I see up to the left there's a really bright light in this field, and I know that's an empty field. There's no houses there or buildings. And there's no other cars on the motorway, and there's no street lights. It's one of those parts of the motorway, there's no lighting. And, we drive on the left, so I see it on the left-hand side. And so I think maybe it's emergency works, maybe a gas main or electricity or something. And I slow right down, and because there's no other cars on the motorway, and I get down like 5 miles an hour. And there's something on the left that's blocking my view, like some trees or something. And the light's right there. And I come past the trees, and there's this craft sitting there. So it was maybe 200 feet from me, 25 foot off the ground. Didn't make a sound, didn't move an inch. It had loads and loads of red pin spotlights and one half of the bottom of it, and this really strong beam of light coming out the other side, going pointing at the ground, and it's shaped like a rugby ball. It's about the size of a large house. And so I'm driving along like 5 miles an hour, and I'm leaning forward, looking up at it through the windscreen, and I got a really good look at it for 20, 30 seconds, and then it was out of sight for me, so I just sped up and went home. But you have a mental checklist. I was looking at it, it can't be a helicopter, it'd be really noisy. It can't be a plane because they can't remain stationary, and it can't be a hot air balloon. I could see there was so much light there. So there was no basket underneath it. And anyway, who'd be doing that at 1 a.m. on a Monday morning in the middle of nowhere with a hot air balloon? So that was a
Whoa.
thing. And
Was
you
that
wonder
scary?
if, no, not really. And also, it's a thing. I wonder if they do it on purpose. It's like that's one of these things they're trying to move you along a certain path, and that they went there. They're like, Simon's coming. Okay, turn the lights on. He's going to see us. And it's a thing of that, because this was in the 90s, And it's almost like I wonder if what I'm doing now with the podcast and the past life regression and writing this book, it was where I'm supposed to be. And all these little nudges along the path have got me to this point. And all this stuff about being a musician and learning how to record at home with software was just to prepare me for recording podcasts.
Yeah, maybe.
And
I often think about that. Yeah.
So that's what I'm wondering about. If it's when this the feathers is to move me down the path a little bit, then I'm seeing another UFO is moving me down the path, and then all these different things.
That's so interesting. Going back to the feathers, I remember one time I was inside a building and we were sitting in road seats and just out of the blue, this feather appeared above me and it just floated down. And I watched it, and no one else saw it. No one seemed interested. No one took any notice. And it would have taken a good minute or so, possibly longer, to float down. And then it landed right at my feet. And I picked it up, and it was a physical feather. And we're inside a building, and I don't think there would have been any birds in the building. There was no hole in the roof. I just was absolutely blown away by how it could have appeared out of nowhere, and it landed right at my feet. I was overseas at the time, so I carried this feather. I was traveling. I carried this feather around with me for a couple of weeks until I had to go back home, and then I got to the airport. And I knew they would not let me take this feather across the borders. So I tried, I did what I could, and I felt such a connection to this feather. I didn't understand it. I still don't understand that experience. But I had it, and I was not begging with the customs people, but I was saying, hey, look, this is a really important item to me. Is there any way I can get it in? And of course, it got confiscated. And I felt like such a loss that this feather was confiscated. I'm like, but you don't
Wow.
understand. It literally appeared out of nowhere. Of course, I didn't tell them that because I didn't want to come across as a bit crazy and maybe miss my flight, go to room two for questioning. Didn't want any of that. So I lost the feather. I've never been able to explain that. Never, ever. It just appeared out of nowhere. And I asked a couple of people who were around me. I was traveling, I didn't know anybody. So I asked them, did you see the feather fall out of the sky? Of course, I sound crazy, but no one else had seen it, no one noticed it. But it was a very physical feather. It wasn't like I just had a vision or something like that. And I often think about that experience and think, what was that? Why did that happen? Why did that happen to me? And I don't really have any answers, but it makes me go, this world is so much more than we think it is. There is so much more going on than our physical experience right now. Yeah. I love
Maybe
it. I
it's
love these
to give you a
stories.
nudge down the path.
Yeah, maybe. And I'm not quite sure what that nudge was. I hope I went down the right path. We're talking this happened quite a few years ago, probably about 20, 25 years ago. I was a teenager at the time, I think. Yeah, hopefully I've went down the right path. I don't know that we can get this life wrong, to be honest. But yeah, I think about what you said as well of maybe everything was setting the scene for this. Maybe all your recording stuff was with music, was setting the scene so you could do the podcast. I don't believe in doing things too wrong. We can make poor decisions, but yeah, I often think the reason for something, we might not understand it at the time, but then later we look back and we go, oh, that's why that happened, or that's why I had to go through that experience, is for something a bit bigger within our lives, a bigger purpose or a bigger experience or something we needed to do. So I kind of love what you said there about that, about maybe it's all meant to be. So going back to your book, Simon, are there any cases which, or any chapters which really stand out to you?
Yeah, there's a Hungarian guy called Tibor Putnoki, and he was in a Hungarian hospital with really high blood pressure, and the doctors had told him that they were really worried about him, that he might not survive, and he felt terrible. And then it was that thing, you've probably heard this, when suddenly they're standing in the ward and they feel fantastic and they think, hey, I'm cured, I feel great. Why are those people running to that bed over there and fussing so much? And it, being in a hospital in a country that's just come out of the Soviet Union, he was thinking, oh, this must be a VIP patient. And on the side of the ward, there was a nurse's room where they would prepare things, but and it had a two-way mirror. So the nurses could see in the ward, but you can't see in their room. And he thought about that room, and then instantly he was in that room with the two nurses. And one of them had a trolley and was getting all this stuff out of the cupboard and putting it on the trolley, going as fast as she could. And she dropped something that rolled under the cabinet. And she didn't pick it up. She just grabbed another one and put it on the trolley. And he thought, I wonder what that thing is. And suddenly he was like 4 inches away from it, his sight. He could see it so clearly. And he read what was on it, and he saw the serial number. And then the other nurse was on the phone to her husband because their children were ill. And she was saying, no, you'll find the paediatrician's number on the first page. You just open the book. And the husband's, no, I can't find it. And Tybor listened to this and then thought, I wonder what's going on there. And instantly he's in the apartment with the father, and he's looking over his shoulder, and he can see the number in the book, and he's going, look, there it is, there it is. And the father gets annoyed and throws the book on the floor, and then the number's visible. But Tybor looked around at the books on the shelves and the furniture and the carpet, and he noticed the man's socks, that they were lots of little pictures of animals on them. And Tybor says he looked at these socks. What sort of a man wears socks like these? And these other things go on to happen where he goes to this space, which he calls a big dark hole. And it's like there's two TV screens there, and one of them showing his whole life. And this is how they do the life review for him. And then the screen above it, he says, shows what he should have done in that incident. But you know what life reviews are like. There's all sorts of ways that they might come to you, and how you're so emotional. But he went back to the hospital and got back in his body. And it was when he woke up afterwards, the doctor came to him and said, what happened when you were dead? And the doctor started researching it, and he found the nurse that was on the phone call. And he said, do you know this man? And she's like, no, I've never met him. And so he described the apartment, and the nurse said, that's it. That's exactly our apartment. And that was the phone call I was having. My husband couldn't find the number. And the doctor went to the apartment with the nurse and looked at it. And when he came back to the hospital, he was holding those socks in his hand with the little animal pictures. And he went to the cabinet and found this item under the cabinet, just as Tybor had described it. And he even got the serial number correct. That
No
exactly
way.
that item. So that's one of my favorite, stories in the book, because it's got all those bits, and it's got that thing where he was in an apartment 7 kilometers from the hospital. There's no way he could have known about this phone call and about what the husband did, but it was all confirmed by them. And that was while he was getting CPR on a bed while those people were trying to help him.
And so when he was thinking the person was a VIP, that was actually his body. I've heard a few of these where they're like, there was just something about that, and they are totally disconnected, disassociated to their physical body, watching this happen, thinking, gee, the poor person in that bed, they're really going through something. To later find out that that was their body and that they were out of their body. So cool. I got goosebumps as you were saying that. I quite often do when a story really resonates. I just get goosebumps all over me, not because I'm cold, not because I'm scared, just because I'm like, oh, yes, this resonates. So got that with that story. I love it. Oh, 30 stories. We need to get into it. We need to keep going. So, yeah, what's next for you, Simon? Do you feel like you'll keep going looking for these verified accounts?
Yeah, basically that's what my podcast is about. So I'll always be talking to people, and the episodes will go out, and I want to do another book, but I want to do a book about people's experiences while they're in coma. I
Oh,
think there's
so
maybe
interesting.
three people in my book who were in a coma when they had their near-death experience. So they weren't flatlined or dead, but they still had that out-of-body experience. But there's some people who say they lived another life while they were in the coma, like another Earth in another universe. And they say that it was absolutely real, just as real as this life. And so I'd like to really investigate that and find out what's going there.
I see. I think this is fascinating. I was in a coma for a little while. I didn't have anything like that, but I have dabbled into it, and I'm in a few groups for people who have been in comas. So I hear a few stories. The one, I think it's probably the same one that you're talking about. This person lived a whole lifetime within their coma. And then when they woke up, they were grieving the loss of their family. You know, in their coma life, they were married, they had children, they had a job. It was just like living this life. When they woke up, they absolutely grieved the loss of their coma life, which is so traumatic. So, yeah, I don't know that we need to be clinically dead to have these incredible experiences, which is where I think this topic is so big and so juicy, because I think we can have a death experience, a spiritual experience, without the death aspect. And like in a coma, quite often they might be near death, but they're not having a near-death experience. You know, they're stable, they're in a coma. Some people can be in comas for quite a long time, and it's to help the body to heal, to rejuvenate, to go through what it needs to go through. So there's not actually a clinical death that's happening. But yeah, I find this topic very, very interesting. So if you're listening and you've been in a coma and you have any memory of being in the coma, if you have any experiences or you know people, get in touch with Simon, because we need as much research as we can in all these topics, and that would be really helpful. So I
Yeah, that'd be
absolutely
great.
love it. Yeah, it's brilliant. I've loved chatting with you, Simon. I just feel like there's so much goodness and so much rich information in what you're doing. And yep, tune into Simon's podcast. It is fantastic. First-hand experience of listening to that for many years. And yeah, Simon, keep up the great work, and I look forward to
Thanks.
having you back on the show when we've got a little bit more to chat about, and maybe one of us has done something a little bit different. So thank you for joining me once again, and I look forward to having you back.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks a lot. So this week I was interviewed by Kirsty Salisbury about my new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get exclusive access to an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get access to an extended episode every month. And you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And look out for the Our Paranormal Afterlife episodes. They're called Paranormal Stories that are released every week. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.